time for the radio show about recreational boating, from the bow to the stern, from port to starboard, and from the bridge to the bilge. It's Bob's No Wake Zone radio show. So let's go down on the docks and see what's happening this week.
Big weekend for Lake of the Ozarks, another one. We've got Harbor Hop today. Lance Utley's going to tell us a little bit about that. It's the Home Lifestyle and Sports Show, kicking off about 10 o'clock this morning over at the Lodge of Four Seasons, so we'll be there for that, and we hope you'll come by. And we also get an update from Donna Schwall about the Two Damn Days paddleboat races that's been 2 weekends ago now. Plus an ethanol update today with David Kennedy from Boat U.S. Government Affairs. Todd Wilkinson, a PR person with the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary, is going to be here to talk to us, and we've got a big Around the Waterfront news segment. But let's get right to it this morning. Let's find out about Harbor Hop, which starts today. And on the guest in our studio from just a couple of weeks back, a little repeat performance with Lance Utley from funlake.com. So, Lance, the question is, tell us a little bit about what the Harbor Hop's all about.
Yeah, it's just a fun time to get out. We have over 40 sponsor locations. It's really easy to get started. It starts at 9 a.m. at select locations. And basically what you're doing is playing a poker hand. You can stop at any of those locations. It's a $20 donation to play. You get dealt a card there, and then you go to different stops, and you collect a 7-card hand, and there is a bonus card that you can get for an 8th hand, and you play your best 5-card poker hand. We do give out certificates.
Oh.
It's certificates for all the sponsor locations. But those certificates are awarded. We pay 1 to 4 slots, and then we pay 5 to 10. There's also section winners, because there's 4 sections on the lake. We pay out 4 worst hands, and then we pick 10 random hands. So quite a bit of chances to win something, and they're pretty good prizes. You're going to get some certificates to spend at any of those 40 sponsor locations, and you spend it just like cash.
Outstanding. So you can load up your boat, you know.
That's correct.
Several people with you, and everybody can go and have a good time. $20 a person, basically, to play.
That's correct, and that is a donation.
And it's not a race. It's a leisurely way to get around the lake, and, you know, maybe people stuck up in the Gravois might want to come down and do a different area, or people maybe that don't get up in the Gravois or that kind of a thing could go someplace else. Is there any benefit to staying in one area, or is there a benefit to making, you know, crossing the lines into different areas?
I always like to use it to see some different areas, but we do pay section winners. So if you complete a hand in a section, you can win simply that section without having one of the top hands or anything like that.
I got you.
And we have them all over the lake here, and that map can be found on funlake.com.
And everything's got to be sort of wrapped up by about 7 o'clock.
That's correct. Yes, 7 o'clock it ends. They'll get you taken care of. Get that bonus card drawn, and then we'll get it wrapped up.
All right, and then it takes you guys quite a while because of the many players that are in this thing. It takes you quite a while to kind of go through all this and see who's first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and so on.
Counting those hands is a very arduous process, and we want to get it right, obviously. So yes, it takes a little while to get that done, but we'll have that out by probably 1st November in that area.
Okay. And then how do you notify, you know, those people that have won something?
Everything happens via certified mail. That's why I encourage everybody, make sure you fill your sheet out correctly, because we're going to be sending that to you via certified mail. So we make sure that it gets in the hands of the winners.
Perfect.
Very rarely do we have one that goes unclaimed for any reason or anything like that. Plus, we have their phone numbers. We'll contact them via phone, via email. We exhaust every possibility to make sure they get those certificates in their hands.
Outstanding. All right. Fall Harbor Hop, the last big event of the boating year, if you will, for 2016 here at Lake of the Ozarks. Funlake.com for more information. Lance, thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Yeah, if you're going to be out on the lake today, you'll need a Boat U.S. towing package with the guys from Boat U.S. Towboats. And to get your insurance, if you will, for now for the next year, call 573-216-4701. Hope nobody has any problems today, but boy, if you need battery jump start or towing, or maybe you get fuel delivered out to you if you run out of gas, the guys from Towboat U.S. can take care of you. $72 a year includes your membership to Boat U.S. Call Captain Dave Anderson, 216-4701, or you can go on my website, bobsnowakezone.com. And click the Towboat U.S. or the Boat U.S. logos to find out more information about how you can be safer out on Lake of the Ozarks. And now let's see if we can get Donna Schwall on the phone. It is our appointed time to call her on the Boat U.S. guest line.
Boy, you talk about punctual. You're right on the dime.
I'm telling you what, if it wasn't for my smartphone, I wouldn't be here. you know that
pretty
routine.
Bad.
I know.
I know it.
It runs our lives. It's just amazing. So I guess the big question is, how was the Two Dam Days paddle boat race?
It was excellent. You know, we were a little bit of concern with the weather being 100% thunderstorms and lightning on our report, you know, Saturday, but it turned out the day was beautiful. We made it through without any storms at all. The big boats were just awesome. They slowed down. They could see us out there. We just so appreciated everything was safe, and it all just went like clockwork.
Sunday was good, too. You know, even though the weather was sort of threatening, it sort of brushed by us, I guess you could say. Did anybody get wet?
Nope. Yep. Not a drop of rain on anyone. Everything just turned out perfect. As a matter of fact, we thought we kind of stepped up the timing. We had some pretty good racers this year, so we were able to have the award ceremony a little bit earlier because we were concerned about weather. So it all just went beautiful.
Good deal. What can you tell us about, you know, who finished at the top in each of their classes?
Well, in the extreme, you know, those are the guys that are really cranking along. We had mixed tandem. The first place was Joe Zellner and Peggy Gabrielson, and what a neat woman she was that came. So they took first place, and I think 14 hours and 54 minutes and 6 seconds to paddle the 2 days. The second place was Chad Brashear and Daryl Simon, and they were at 15 hours, 53 minutes, 58 seconds. First place men's tandem that wasn't mixed was Dylan McCarty and Jim Short. Jim Short has been our race advisor, and it was really pretty exciting because they were like neck and neck, back and forth. You know, first we'd have, you know, the Chad and Daryl, and then boom, we'd have Dylan and Jim, and it was back and forth. So it was pretty cool. At the finish, it was exciting. Mike Herbert was our men's solo first place and top paddler. He did both days of the lake, the 90 miles, in 12 hours and 57 minutes and 34 seconds.
Surprise,
can you imagine?
Surprise, surprise, right? With him, he's amazing,
yeah.
Isn't he? Wow.
We had Sweet 16 folks really do some good work, and we had a mixed tandem in the Sweet 16, Gary Wiggins and Haley Thompson. Because of the boat show and some things that were going on at Marine Max, we left from the Lodge of Four Seasons. Made it around in 3 hours and 20 minutes. And then we had the under 15-foot class, which was Jimmy Dabbs in 2 hours and 48 minutes. Solo over 15, Greg Fehrenbach. We had quite a few folks this year in that. The really exciting race that we had, or actually participant in the Sweet 16, was Savannah Herbert, Mike Herbert's daughter.
Oh.
And courtesy of Joe Zellner, he happened to pick up a new kayak, and he loaned it to her so she could enter into the race. So that was really nice.
Oh, very good. She
took first place in her division. So it was kind of nice having an Olympic gold medalist and world champion with his daughter, both of them taking first place in their categories. So
very good. You know, it was awful hot and humid on Saturday, and not so much on Sunday. It was still kind of warm, but I assume that probably had a little bit of an effect on them with that that 99 miles that they had to go. There's some kind of an announcement or something important that you need to tell everybody about?
Well, yes. We are going to do, by popular request, we've been asked for 3 years to consider this, so we're going to consider it. We're going to do a kind of a different version of Two Dam Days next year. To give you a little bit, I'm not saying that we're not going to do some things on the lake itself, but we are going to consider doing a race below Bagnell Dam on the Osage with a full moon and make it a night race. And we're going to call it the Osage Howler, I think. And we start off probably at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they finish sometime the next morning. And so we have many, 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 many paddlers from all over the Midwest that have told us they want to do this. So we're pretty excited about it. Talked to the Water Patrol a little bit in Jeff City about it, so we'll be applying for our permit. But we'll have more details to come. And we think it's going to be quite exciting.
That would be exciting. You know, that MR-340 that they do down the Missouri all the way from Kansas City to St. Louis is pretty exciting. Now, that's not a night, but that certainly would give some of these guys another challenge. Well, congratulations on another great year for the Two Dam Days paddle boat races. And Donna, with the Lake of the Ozarks Watershed Alliance, sure appreciate you. And thanks to all the volunteers, too.
That's huge. Thank you so much, myself, from the bottom of our heart at LOA. It's our annual fundraiser. Without all those volunteers out there and the courtesy of everyone at the lake being such wonderful people to work with, we couldn't do this. So we thank you all.
Well, thank you, Donna, and thank you, Lance, for that great information. Harbor Hop this weekend, along with a home lifestyle and sports show, and a lot going on. David Kennedy's going to give us an ethanol update. He's the manager of government affairs at Boat US. Then Todd Wilkinson is going to join us after the bottom of the hour break, talk about the Coast Guard and the Coast Guard Auxiliary. And then we have some news about the president of Boat US, Margaret Podlick. Moving on, coming up in our Around the Waterfront news segment, as Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show continues on News Talk KRMS. 1150 AM, FM 97.5 Lori, 104.9 Osage Beach, and on the internet, live streaming audio, krmsradio.com. We'll be right back.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they are also the most resourceful, responsive, and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.
What is the difference between the Coast Guard and the Coast Guard Auxiliary? We're going to find out shortly. Next segment, Todd Wilkinson from the Coast Guard Auxiliary Springfield, Missouri, going to be joining us here on the Boat US guest line. But standing by, David Kennedy, who is the manager of government affairs at Boat US, going to be here to talk about E15 and kind of where things are now with that and some other issues that government affairs is taking care of for us as Boat US members. You know, there's a new device on the market to help prevent electric shock drowning. And, of course, electric shock drowning, ESD, is when water becomes electrified. Pools and docks are surrounded by lights and pumps and boat lifts and so on. And faulty wiring or failed GFCIs or stray voltage can introduce electricity to the water where your family might swim. And I know the weather's getting cooler and the water's getting cooler, but still there's that chance of somebody jumping in or falling in accidentally. The Shock Alert is now on the market, and this is a portable device that uses three probes underneath to detect voltage gradients in the water, and they warn you then with not only some red LED lights that flash, but there's also a kind of a siren sound that you'll hear, an audible warning. This thing has a tether on it, so you hook it up, you put the batteries in it, you hit the power button, you put it in, you carry it around, you just basically walk around your dock with it, and it's going to let you know if everything's cool. You can check your swimming pool or any fountains that you might have as well with it, and you can also check your neighbor's dock as well. I'm offering free shipping if you go to my website, bobsnowakezone.com, put in the promo code NOWAKEZONE, and you can order one of these. They'll ship it to you free, and the price $129. I would also urge you, if you're interested today, the Home Lifestyle and Sports Show is at the Lodge of the Four Seasons, and the Shock Alert folks from the St. Louis area are going to be there. Their website for more information, shockalert.com, or again, for free shipping on one, if you want to order one, no shipping, just put in the promo code NOWAKEZONE, and do that by going to my website, bobsnowakezone.com.
One of the biggest issues of the last several years has been ethanol and boat motors. And let's get an update going for us this morning on Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show. Welcome to the program on our Boat U.S. guest line, Manager of Government Affairs, David Kennedy. It's nice to have you back. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Bob. Thanks for having me here.
I fired off an email to you right after the boat show, and because I had a gentleman came up and said was saying to me, he says, hey, I've been hearing that the marinas are going to have to start selling E15. And I was like, I don't think so, but I'm going to check. So I'm going to check right at the top here with you. That's going to be sort of our topic of the morning. Let's get that question answered very quickly. Are marinas around the country going to be forced to sell E15?
The short answer is no. There isn't any particular rule or law that forces a retailer, let alone a marine retailer, to sell E15. And there are some practical barriers to it where anybody who wants to sell that fuel has to install different pumps. They have to update their tanks. You know, it just as this is a different material for boats and why it's hard for boat engines, it can be hard on the systems that deliver fuel. So I'm not aware of anything. And the question is, as E15 becomes more prevalent out there, people are going to see it at more and more gas stations, and that's something that people need to be watching out for.
Yeah, and that may be where he was thinking if he was a trailer boater, and I never got that far with him in the questioning, but maybe that's where we need to talk a little bit. You know, the marine industry and several others band together and have talked to the EPA until they're blue in the face about, you know, forcing these larger and larger quantities of E15 into the marketplace, and then people are finding that, gee, it doesn't work real well in my mercury outboard.
Yeah, and that it really is a very complicated piece of how all these things go together. So the mandate, this renewable fuel standard that says, you know, you will sell so much ethanol, and that's been an ever-increasing amount written into law, 2007, is trying to drive the market where people, the only way to absorb that is to then turn around and sell more E15. Well, we know that doesn't work in our boats, but there's programs to get this out there into the retailers. And if that's a fuel that somebody wants to use in their vehicle and they decide that the price and all those pieces work for them, okay, we understand that. But we know that it doesn't work in boats. So that's our big challenge is to get the law changed. But you know, right now we've got to deal with the practical implementation of that policy.
They are increasing each year, I think, the amount of E15 that's being produced and sent out into the marketplace. And then is that also then decreasing the amount of E0, I guess you could call it E0, that's out there for us to consume?
That's correct. So right now EPA had put out a notice saying, okay, we're going to mandate this amount of ethanol, and they did that as driven by the law, as they're required to in the law. In that public notice comment, they said, what does everybody think? Well, we had about 24,000 comments come in from voters saying, whoa, slow down, don't keep forcing it out there. And one of the pieces of that within EPA's own notice was that if the total amount of ethanol that they're going to mandate is put into place, there's only going to be room for about 200 million gallons of E0 across the entire country. Well, we know in 2014 there was just under 9 billion gallons of E0 sold in the United States. So we're going from 9 billion to 200 million of available fuel. So even if you had a marina or the gas station out on the road to the lake that was able to get E0, it's going to be a lot more difficult for them to even source it for the folks, but if that's the fuel that they know is going to work in their boat.
And maybe more expensive?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple market forces. I wasn't an economics major, but if you lower the supply of something, I'm pretty sure the price is going to increase.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we in Missouri were fortunate last year in that our Marine Dealers Association pushed for and got a retraction of a 17-cent per gallon tax on the water. And so that dropped our fuel prices. And, of course, the way fuel prices have been going the last several months, you know, it's holding down pretty well, but under $3 most places. But it looks like now with these changes and looking at 2017, we may be faced with a little bit higher prices. I wonder if we could talk just a little bit. You know, this the ethanol issue is one that has been plaguing the marine industry for a long time. Are the marine manufacturers of motors and that, are they starting to make motors that are going to handle E15, or are they just saying, no, we're not doing it?
I keep in mind that we've got 12 million registered boats in this country, and those are you know, we've got to think about that very long tail of boats that much as I wish I could buy a new boat every couple of years, I know that's not the reality, and I need to make sure that there's fuel that's available that's going to work in my 10, 15-year-old outboard. So I think the manufacturers, you know, they're always going to continue to evolve their engineering and try and make something that works in the system, but boy, we got a lot of boats we got to take care of right now, and you know, and think about the cost that imposes on the end customer of this, you know, thing that they love to do, and now you've got just one more piece of it of just making it that much harder to do because of this mandate.
Mm-hmm. The Boat U.S. Government Affairs Department does a lot more than just work on ethanol. What are a couple of the other things that they're sort of on your radar?
Sure. So when you get into this time of year with the broader national elections, there isn't necessarily a lot of legislation that moves, although we've been tracking very closely and involved with something called the Water Resources Development Act. This talks about dredging and levees and all the things that go into Army Corps. Not a lot of policy changes this year, but it's important to keep it moving because we know that a lot of folks go out into Army Corps properties and keeping recreation as part of what they do and keeping us in mind. We're involved with that bill. So we expect that to pass this year, and that's one of those long-term efforts that we stay involved in and make sure that recreational boaters are part of that.
One other area that I know has been sort of popping its head up a little more frequently now, and that's the aquatic invasive species. Any efforts on the Government Affairs Department to address that?
Sure. Actually, it's been more of our the Boat U.S. Foundation and some of our folks. It's the Foundation for Boating Safety and Clean Water. Mm. And they've really tried to focus on what are the things we can do as boaters to make sure we're not adding to the problem. So hopefully a lot of folks have gotten the message that the clean, drain, and dry. So as you take your boat out of the water, that you know, pull the plug out, empty the live well, and clean off any of the weeds that are on there. And by doing that, we're going to make it easier for people to keep moving their boats around. There's also, and this may come up at the IBEX conference, the manufacturers conference, looking at the designs of the boats and how that the trailers and how they can be approved so that we don't lead to the spread of the different species.
It's not like you don't have enough to do.
Yeah, always more, but that's okay.
That's right. That's good. Well, thank you, David. I sure appreciate it. Thanks for the update on ethanol and continued success there with the Boat U.S. Government Affairs Department. We appreciate it very much.
Great. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it.
And for more information, boatus.com/gov. Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show. It's time for a break. We will be right back. Going to talk Coast Guard and Coast Guard Auxiliary next with Todd Wilkinson. On News Talk KRMS 1150 AM 97.5 104.9 and on KRMSradio.com.
Hi, I'm Sarah O'Kelly, founder of Skipper's Review. I started Skipper's Review because I wanted somewhere online for my local boating community to make connections and recommendations. So now it's up and running. I've been getting out of the office to enjoy the Florida sunshine and to meet some of my members. Each week, you can hear me swapping salty tales with sailors, surfers, swimmers, divers, boat owners, and builders, anyone with a story to tell about their life and their relationship with the sea. So join me, Sarah O'Kelly, with Skipper's Review on Boat Radio.
If you miss the regular Saturday morning broadcast of Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show on News Talk KRMS, don't panic. You can listen in on the new boatradio.net, Saturdays at 6 p.m. Central. This is Mike McDowell inviting you to check out boatradio.net.
Okay, so why is the Coast Guard on inland lakes like Lake of the Ozarks Table Rock Lake. We're going to find out. We're going to talk to Public Affairs Officer Todd Wilkinson from the Springfield, Missouri area, and we're going to learn about the Coast Guard and the Coast Guard Auxiliary, what the differences are, and some other interesting questions for you. You know, when duct tape just won't do, get a hold of Paradise Upholstery and Canvas right here at Lake of the Ozarks. These guys do great work. They specialize in marine upholstery, canvas work, carpeting. They're backed by a satisfaction guarantee, and hearing all the customers that stopped by during the boat show a couple of weeks ago saying how grateful they were for the kind of work that Paradise Upholstery has done for them, I can assure you, you're going to get a good job. You may have to wait a while because they are busy this time of year, particularly doing those winter covers and maybe some interior decoration, interior restorations. But if you need something, let's get a hold of them now, and that way you can get on the calendar. And anything that might be done over the winter months would be a benefit to you. That way, when you get here next spring, it's all done and ready. Pete and Pam, Emily and Kayla, Cesar and Amelia, all working at Paradise Upholstery and Canvas. You can reach them at 573-216-7214. That's 216-7214. Find them on Facebook or go to their website, paradiseupholstery.com. You can click and see some of their YouTube videos that they put together about some of their work by going to my website, bobsnowwakezone.com, and you can either click the Paradise Upholstery logo or the little text right below, and it'll take you right in there.
So the big question of the morning for Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show this morning is, why is the Coast Guard in Missouri? To talk about this, we have a Coast Guard Auxiliary member, Todd Wilkinson, from the Springfield, Missouri area with us on the Boat U.S. guest line. Todd, good morning. Thanks for taking some time to be with us.
Morning, sir.
So why is the Coast Guard in Missouri? Let's talk about that. Well, first, I want to ask you a little bit about your background, and then we're going to talk about Coast Guard history and the auxiliary and what they do. What's your background, Todd?
Well, I'm a former U.S. National Park Ranger, and now I'm a full-time community college history teacher and librarian. And on my time off and my weekends, I'm a proud member of the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary, the enrolled volunteer reserve of the United States Coast Guard.
What do you guys do?
We do a lot of recreational boating safety. In fact, that's one of our primary missions in the auxiliary, is to help educate the boating public about how to stay safe on the water. Of course, we're really really big on reminding folks to wear their life jackets, that you have the correct safety equipment on board your vessel, and just to be aware of your surroundings. We also serve as force multipliers for the United States Coast Guard, and the Coast Guard Auxiliary literally does almost every job that the active duty Coast Guard does, with the exception of their law enforcement and military operations.
All right. Now, I guess the question that it sort of gets the hair on our necks raised just a little bit in some circles is, why is the Coast Guard on Lake of the Ozarks? Why is the Coast Guard on Table Rock when they're not really navigable per se because of the dam situation on each end, but we are still designated, both lakes are designated as navigable waterways, which then provides that Coast Guard coverage?
Well, of course, the federal navigable waterway applies to, like in Table Rock's case, a lake that goes over a state boundary. So, of course, you have Arkansas and Missouri there. There's the connection to the Corps of Engineers being responsible for Table Rock Lake. As I understand it, the federal navigable waterway designation for Lake of the Ozarks came many years ago in some legislation in that regard. The connection to that, those laws, the federal navigable waterway designation, that's where the Coast Guard really comes in, because we're responsible for any federal navigable waterway in the United States. And, of course, that's the question we get asked in Missouri a lot. What are you doing here in the Midwest? People think of the Coast Guard, they think of Massachusetts, and they think of California. But actually, the 8th Western District of the Coast Guard Auxiliary and the United States Coast Guard is one of the largest in the country. And it goes literally from Minneapolis, Minnesota, all the way down to the Red River in Louisiana and Texas, and out to the Rockies.
Yeah, it's an amazing size. And, being as really small as the Coast Guard is in numbers, It's hard to believe that they can cover all that territory. And I know we don't see them very much here at Lake of the Ozarks, but they do make their presence known every once in a while. You know, the navigable waterway, as you mentioned, there started because, you know, paddle boats, steamers used to come up from St. Louis and go all the way up to Warsaw and pass that to deliver goods and carry passengers and those kinds of things before we had any of the dams that we have here, at least. On either side. Todd, let's talk a little bit about the history of the Coast Guard. It is one of the armed services of the United States, but it's got something kind of unique in its, I guess you could say, designated a little bit differently.
Correct. It's actually part of the Department of Homeland Security. It's been in DHS since after 9/11. Before that, it was a part of the Department of Transportation. It first came under the Department of the Treasury. When it was organized way back in August of 1790, and we actually had a different name at that time, we were the U.S. Revenue Marine or the U.S. Revenue Cutter Service. The Coast Guard name did not actually come around until 1915, when the Coast Guard came out of the Revenue Marine and then also the United States Life Saving Service, which had been organized in the late 19th century. Those two organizations were brought together. And then in the 1930s, the Roosevelt administration brought in another government agency that was responsible for aids to navigation and maritime safety, as well as inspection services. So over the years, the Coast Guard has just taken on a number of different roles regarding maritime safety. It's the only of the military branches that actually has law enforcement authority and capacity.
Let me ask you a little bit about then the difference between that and the auxiliary. The United States Coast Guard Auxiliary is a complete volunteer type organization.
Correct. That's absolutely true. And again, we actually do not participate in any military or law enforcement missions as auxiliarists, but we do everything else. You know, I'm a public affairs rate in the Coast Guard Auxiliary. So the training that I've received as a public affairs officer is virtually identical to what a public affairs rate in the active duty or reserves are going to get at their A school once they complete boot camp at Camp May, New Jersey. It's going to be abbreviated because I'm, you know, obviously a civilian volunteer, but it's still the same level. And in many cases, those of us who are auxiliarists, who are specialists in various areas, we actually get to work a lot of times with our active duty and reserve counterparts. And there really is a blurring of the lines these days between what we call the silver side, which is the auxiliary, because our rank insignia has silver lace, and then the gold side, who are the fellows that wear the gold braid on their uniforms. We've got a lot of prior Coasties, a lot of prior Navy, and so there's a knowledge base that comes in that in many ways is second to none. I mean, I've learned so much about boating and water safety in the 3 years that I've been in from a lot of my fellow auxiliarists.
Todd, tell me a little bit about the vessel safety checks. Those are one of the things that I think maybe most people just, you know, automatically, okay, that's the Coast Guard Auxiliary that does those. Tell us a little bit about how that all works for a boater that would like to make sure his vessel is safe.
The vessel safety examination is a free program of the auxiliary. All you have to do is go on to the Coast Guard Auxiliary's website, cgaux.org, and when you get on the page, at the very top, there's a series of buttons. The very first one says, Get a Vessel Safety Check. If you click that button and fill out the form on that website, the I-1 of VSC website, an email is sent to the closest 5 vessel examiners in the auxiliary to you, and then that person or one of those persons will contact you and make arrangements to come and examine your vessel. It's about a 45-minute process, generally. We'll come to you even. We certainly will welcome if folks want to trailer their boats and bring them to us, but it's easier if we can come to you. We'll come. We'll go over a checklist basically of required and recommended safety items that should be upon the vessel. We'll check if the fire extinguishers, talk a little bit about PFDs, go over some other safety requirements and recommendations. At the end of the examination, if the vessel passes, and it's a no-penalty examination, by the way, if it passes, we're going to issue a sticker. The sticker is good for a calendar year, so it expires on December 31st at the end of the year. And that sticker basically lets the active-duty Coast Guard or the Water Patrol know that this vessel meets the minimum requirements of the Coast Guard and the Coast Guard Auxiliary in terms of safety.
All right, very good. Give us that website one more time, the website address.
Sure, it is cgaux.org. www.missouriboat.org.
All right, very good. Well, that's a good thing that people can do, and even going into the fall is a good time to have everything checked out, and that way you've got some time, even if you're putting your boat away for the season, you've still got some time to get some of those things fixed and repaired or replaced or whatever needs to be done, so you're ready to go next spring. Todd Wilkinson's been our guest, auxiliary member from Springfield, Missouri. Thanks so much for being with us on the program this morning.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
So what's happened to Margaret Podlick from Boat U.S.? And, well, we're going to talk about some around-the-waterfront news, including a story where a Good Samaritan saved 8 people off a burning boat. That's coming up next on Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show. Saturday morning with you on News Talk KRMS, 1150 a.m., 97.5 in Laurie, 104.9 Osage Beach, and around the world on krmsradio.com. We'll be right back.
Earliest prehistory reveals mankind's innate connection to the sea. From boats of woven reed in Egypt, to Homer's black ships of the Trojan War, down to the naval battles of Greece, Rome, and every civilization since. I'm Brandon Huebner, and I'll present the history, archaeology, and literature that connect us with our past on the sea, all that on the Maritime History Program. Join me as we voyage down through the ages and witness the development of sailing, trade, and much more. The Maritime History Program, with me, Brandon Huebner, every Wednesday, here on Boat Radio.
It's about 7:49 on Saturday morning, time for the last segment of our program this morning. Just for you, the Home Lifestyle and Sports Show is today and tomorrow. How about that? It's going to be at the Lodge of the Four Seasons. You've been hearing all about it. We hope you'll take some time and come by and see us. We'll be doing a live broadcast starting in just a little bit here on KRMS. But we're going to be there Saturday all day today and again on Sunday tomorrow at the Lodge of the Four Seasons. Lots going on, lots of stuff to see and do in the areas of home, lifestyle, and sports. The Lodge of the Four Seasons out on HH Highway. Well, let's get into a little around-the-waterfront news after we hear from a couple of sponsors this morning. You know, one of the most convenient marina locations on Lake of the Ozarks is Marine Max. They are conveniently located about the 16 and a half mile marker on the main channel. So you've got a couple of directions to go when you come out. You've got lots of good things there for you, like convenient parking, full-service fuel dock, a real quiet family atmosphere, pet-friendly stations. They've got slips up to 65 feet, personal dock boxes all provided, along with Wi-Fi and basic cable, clean restrooms and shower facilities, year-round security staff, discount at the fuel dock 10%, and lots more to go with it. I would urge you to get a hold of Angie Cook. She is the marina manager there. Go take a tour, because if you are getting ready to buy a boat and need a place to keep it, or if you're thinking about moving, you might want to check in with Marine Max. Now, they're also located at 3070 Bagnell Dam Boulevard, and you can call them at 365-5382. Or for more information, just go to the website, which is marinemax.com. The other sponsor I want to mention to you this morning is Hydrohoist Boat Lifts. And, of course, they've been on board with us along with Marine Max and Boat U.S. since almost the very beginning of our program 6 years ago. And from the guys at Hydrohoist, you know, they are over 50 years now in not only inventing the Hydrohoist lift, hydro-pneumatic lift, but also taking all kinds of steps to improve them all along the way. Contact Joanne Clark. She's the area manager at the Lynn Creek location for Lake of the Ozarks, and you can find her there pretty much every day, Monday through Friday. And here's the telephone number for you to call, 573-346-7505. Or you can send her an email, jclark@boatlift.com. Do the same by going to the website, boatlift.com, for additional information, or just stop into their facilities when you're driving by. They're 4 miles down from Lake of the Ozarks, from Osage Beach down toward Camden. So they're on 54 just before you get to A Road. Hydrohoist, Boat Lifts of the Ozarks. Well, let's do some around the waterfront news, catch up on a few stories for you here. Boat U.S. President Margaret Podlick ends her career at Boat US after 23 years. Wow. According to the CEO, Kirk Law, we want to give thanks to Margaret for her years of service and dedication to America's recreational boating owners and all the efforts that she's put forth at Boat US over the years. She began her career more than 23 years ago in, as a director of Clean Water Trust, now which is the Boat US Foundation for Safe Boating and Clean Water. And she also was part of the Government Affairs Department there for a number of years before becoming named the president. In 2014, she was honored as the Darlene Briggs Marine Industry Woman of the Year. And she's picked up several other awards along the way from the U.S. Coast Guard, their National Boating Safety Council committee that she was on. And she was also an avid sailor. So we wish her well, and we'll be anxious to see who is stepping up or who will be appointed as the new president of Boat US. We mentioned earlier that eight people were rescued from a burning boat near Sandy Hook, New Jersey. The Coast Guard got a call, a distress call on VHF Channel 16 from a 40-foot recreational boat saying the boat was on fire. The Coast Guard Rescue sent out a 47-foot lifeboat and found the burning boat. The Good Samaritan had already transferred the eight people off the boat. And the Coast Guard assisted the fire department from New York at putting out the fire on the boat, but the fire was extinguished. However, the boat did sink in about 85 feet of water. All eight people that were transferred off the boat by the Good Samaritan were taken to area hospitals, minor medical concerns, according to the Coast Guard. So that's really good news. We've got a couple of three stories here from the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators. The group had their 57th annual meeting in Seattle recently, and they also announced the new president of the organization, and she is Stephanie Weatherington from Arkansas's Boating Law Administrator, now president of the nonprofit organization for the 2016-17 year. And she's a native of Little Rock, Arkansas. Weatherington graduated in 1994 from the University of Arkansas, Little Rock, with a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. She began her career as a wildlife officer with the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission back in 1995. She was named the Boating Law Administrator in June of 2003. So congratulations again to Stephanie Weatherington, now new president of the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators. Some others were named as well. Vice President Tom Guess from Virginia's Department of Game and Inland Fisheries. Mark Brown, Oklahoma Highway Patrol, as treasurer. Members at large included Cody Jones from Texas Department of Parks and Wildlife and Tom Dunleavy from New Hampshire's Department of Safety, and also Kenton Turner, Indiana Department of Natural Resources. Other awards were passed out during their annual meeting of NASBLA. The prestigious National Boating Educator of the Year Award went to Erica Brooks in neighboring Kansas. She is with the Department of Wildlife and Parks. They generously sponsored by BoaterExam.com, the Boater Education Educator of the Year Award was launched in 2011 to recognize those who go above and beyond to engage students and boaters, raise awareness, and make boating education initiatives relevant through and through. Erica Brooks has held her position as boating education coordinator there in Kansas since 2004. Congratulations, Erica. She's been on our program before. One other award was passed out to Tamara Terry, Marketing Director for the Division of Wildlife in the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, with its prestigious NASBLA Award. So congratulations to all those who received honors at the NASBLA, National Association of State Boating Law Administrators, annual convention.
Join us at the Home Lifestyle and Sport Show October 8th and 9th at the Lodge of Four Seasons. The Lake Erie Chamber is proud to roll out this brand new out-of-the-box fall show. Visit with vendors from home trades, healthcare, beauty and skin, hunting, fishing, boating, golfing, and so much more. Make sure you mark your calendar for this one. It's guaranteed to be not the average trade show. The show will feature a live main stage, a 3,000-gallon fish tank, and live demos throughout the weekend show hours. Visit LakeErieChamber.com for full details. See you in October.
In other around-the-waterfront news, Coast Guard is cracking down on fake captains manning illegal charters. This comes to us from Miami Beach. The U.S. Coast Guard station Miami Beach has been on the lookout for fake captains manning illegal charters at Nixon's Beach in Biscayne Bay. Coast Guard Lieutenant Commander Michael Cortesay said a captain who has passengers paying to be on a boat, his or her boat, is required by law to have a merchant mariner's license. He says it's similar to a guy buying a bus and saying, hey, I'm a bus driver today, when he really doesn't have any of the safety equipment or the proper licensing or training. They're trying to get the message out to people who charter a vessel that it's perfectly acceptable to ask the captain to see his credentials. Well, wrapping up our Around the Waterfront news segment this morning, a man in a 1,200-pound pumpkin boat sets a world record in a kayak race. Massachusetts native Todd Sandstrom put himself in a record books over Labor Day weekend, paddling 1,240-pound hollowed-out pumpkin through the 8-mile-long Taunton River Great Pumpkin Run. So, yes, the guy made a pumpkin in a boat into a boat and then raced it down the river. The race finished at the USS Massachusetts, and Sandrum set out to make that there. He said the biggest thing was I wanted to get in front of the USS Massachusetts. That was his goal. Sandstrom said that, no one else will ever be able to say they took a 1,200-pound pumpkin to the bow of the USS Massachusetts. Sandstrom gave himself quite an arm workout by kayaking his 1,200-pound pumpkin that day.
It's summertime on Table Rock. I ain't worried about my Monday through Friday job. The whole family plays on an on-road swing while we listen to Chris Stapleton sing. No shirt, no shoes, no phone, no weights on.
Thanks a lot there. Frank Long singing the song, The No Wake Zone, for us on Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show. Thank you so much for being with us today. We do appreciate it. Thanks to Todd Wilkinson back there talking to us about the Coast Guard, the Coast Guard Auxiliary. Also, thanks to David Kennedy with the ethanol update from Boat US. Thanks again to Lance Utley and to Donna Schwall for being on the program as well. And thank you very much for listening. We do appreciate it. See you next week, same time, same boat channel right here. Until then, we'll see you out on the lake and at the Home Lifestyle and Sports Show later today or tomorrow.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they are also the most resourceful, responsive, and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.